First Baptist Church of Redmond, August 7th, 2022, John chapter 8, I am.
Please rise and join me in reading John 8, 57 through 58. Then the Jews said to him, "You are not yet 50 years old, and have you seen Abraham?" Jesus said to them, "Most assuredly, I say to you, before Abraham was, I am." You may be seated.
The title, the theme of this message is very simple, I am. It's found in Exodus 3:14 and John 8:58, the words of Jesus intentionally. I want to talk about Christmas. I apologize for those of you who think I'm twirly, but I want to talk about Christmas today. Christmas is a celebration of a real event, according to most Americans. Just don't expect them to know exactly why Jesus was born and came to earth. A new study from Lifeway Research finds close to 3 in 4 Americans believe Jesus was born in Bethlehem. Hooray. Even more say Jesus is the Son of God the Father. Hooray. But, less than half of all Americans believe Jesus existed prior to being born on that first Christmas. According to a Lifeway Research study, more than 9 in 10 Americans celebrate Christmas. For most of us celebrating, Christmas is about historical occurrence. More than 7 in 10, to be precise, 72%, say the Christians, Jesus Christians believe in Jesus being born in Bethlehem more than 2,000 years ago. Most Americans agree Jesus Christ is the Son of God the Father, exactly 80%. But the average person isn't quite as sure about the Son of God's existence prior to Jesus' birth. Surprisingly, around 41% say God's Son existed before Jesus was born in Bethlehem. 32% of Americans disagree, and 28% say they're not sure. That's graphic. So, I am by itself in John 8:58 is not one of the 7 I am statements. I am the vine, I am the bread of life, I am the light of the world, I am the gate, I am the good shepherd, I am the resurrection and the life, and I am the way, the truth, and the life. But by saying this, not only does Jesus affirm the questions of the Jews ask with the solemn formula of verity and authority, he affirms vastly more. Yet, this I am is nothing new by means of 2 tiny words. They're 1 word in the original language of the Bible. But by means of 2 tiny words, it states only what Jesus has testified and continues to testify of himself in many other words and many other connections. It forms the parting of the ways for one choice is faith and the next choice is unbelief. We'll begin. I know that Patrick Nuri covered that section a little bit, but I wanted to pay closer attention to John 8:48 through 59. We'll begin with the 8:48. Then the Jews answered and said to him, "Do not we say rightly that you are a Samaritan and have a demon?" Bitter was the hatred between the Jews and the Samaritans. That biting remark, you are a Samaritan, was about the meanest thing Jews could think of. To make the insult even more deadly, they tell Jesus that this is a common saying about them, and an evil spirit, they say, possesses him and is causing him to denounce those good people who acknowledge no Father but God. Jesus answered, I do not have a demon, but I honor my Father, and you dishonor me. Jesus' emphatic denial that the Jews had a right to claim God as their Father was not Satan-inspired. On the contrary, it was called forth by his zeal for the Father's honor, by calling God their Father, a father of his children, and by heaping monstrous insults upon the Son, in 848, they were dishonoring the Father. They also dishonored the Son directly by saying, you are Samaritan and you have a demon, and indirectly because they recognize that this the Father is dishonored as well. And I do not seek my own glory. There is one who seeks and judges. The enemies will not be able to say that they never had an opportunity to listen to the proclamation of the gospel. To keep the word of Christ means three things. Accept it by faith. Obey it. And stand guard protecting it. Most assuredly, I say unto you, if anyone keeps my words, he shall never see death. Anyone, whether Jew or Gentile, it does not matter in the least, who does this will certainly never see or experience death. And then the Jews said to him, now we know that you have a demon. Abraham is dead, and the prophets. And you say, if anyone keeps my words, he shall never taste death. The reality of demon possession was accepted on every side. Nobody had an argument with demon possession in those days. Again, what is most literal is an earthly interpretation, as if he had been talking about physical death. They said Abraham died, as did the prophets. The biography of each of these great men ended with the terse comment, and he died. But Jesus had not been speaking about physical death. Are you greater than our father Abraham, who is dead? And the prophets are dead. Why do you make yourself out to be? The exclamation, certainly, you're not greater than our father Abraham, immediately recalls a somewhat similar one which proceeded from the lips of the Samaritan woman in John chapter 4. However, soon afterward, her heart gave an affirmative answer to the question. With them, it was very different. Theirs were a case of progressive hardening. Their heart was hardened over and over by their words coming out of their mouths. Whom are you making yourself? As if Jesus were trying to glorify himself. Of course, I am honoring my Father, had not even registered with him. They had not listened to his words. A side comment, if you're so interested in what you're going to say next when you make an argument, one thing is true, you're not listening. Jesus answered, if I honor myself, my honor is nothing. It is my Father who honors me, of whom you say that he is your God. The very one who by this base and wicked vilifiers is proudly called our God glorifies the Son whom they reject. "This is my beloved Son, with whom I am well pleased. Listen to him." This proves how empty was their claim and how wicked their attack. The Father is ever engaged in the glorification of the Son. He does this by enabling the Son to perform mighty works, by causing his virtues to stand out in connection with his suffering and rewarding him for it, and even at times by a direct voice from heaven. "This Father you call our God," says Jesus, and he continues, "yet you have not known him, but I know him. And if I say I do not know him, I shall be a liar like you." Wow. "But I do know him and keep his word." The meaning is this, of the crowd: you have not learned to recognize him, have not been acquainted with him, though he revealed himself to you, but "I do know him intuitively and directly, having been in his very presence from all eternity." It's fair to add, however, that the Jews possessed neither the one or the other kind of knowledge, and Jesus possessed both. He knew the Father both intuitively, because he and the Father are one, he was with the Father, and by experience. "Your father Abraham rejoiced to see my day. He saw it and was glad." We accept the explanation on the following grounds. 1. Anyone who listened to the words of Jesus and was acquainted with the story of Abraham would naturally connect his reference to Abraham's rejoicing from the well-known passages in Genesis. 2. The Aramaic explanation of Genesis 17:17. The Hebrew word "laughed" as replaced with the word for "rejoice." And 3, the fact that during the old dispensation, the law, the Old Testament era, and right up to the days of Christ's sojourn on earth, there was a messianic expectation, and it was clearly taught in Scripture. And the Jews continue to harp on it. "Then the Jews said to him, 'You are not yet 50 years old, and you have seen Abraham?'" The Jews, with their materialistic, earthly, and literalistic bent of mind, were not able to figure out how there could ever have been any contact between Abraham and Jesus. To their minds, it was an absurdity that Jesus could have seen Abraham. Why, he was not even 40 years old, but they'd be very generous. They are willing to make it not even 50 years. In any event, so the reason Jesus could not have seen, Jesus could not have seen Abraham. Jesus said to them, the key verse, "Most assuredly I say unto you, before Abraham was, I am." I didn't wear this, but I have this very t-shirt, and I wore it around the house yesterday. It explains in vivid terms Jesus was calling himself the great I am, and what the individual letters make up when Moses wrote I am. Look at the first line: "Behold nail, behold hand." Read it not left to right like we do, but like Hebrew would have, right to left. The letters stand for the sound they make. You have a word that is translated hand, standing for the first letter. You have the word that means look up or behold something. You have a letter that means a nail. And you have a letter that stands for behold or look up. So left to right, hand, behold, nail, behold. That's the translation of the letters and their meaning of the word Jehovah, Yahweh. It gives its various forms, and that's why it's seen as YHWH. We pronounce it Yahweh officially, but with that word is translated Jehovah. That's a good enough translation as it was. But amazing. Hand, behold, nail, behold. The spelling of God's name, God's covenant name with Israel, is teaching about somebody who has a nail in their hand. It marks the historical point of the time when Abraham came into existence, as against the time prior to that point when Abraham did not exist. The word sets a point of beginning for the existence of Abraham, so the I am indicates absolute existence for the person of Jesus with no point of beginning at all. Contrast that with the feeling of most Americans that Jesus didn't exist before he was born in the manger. He claimed that intentionally, most assuredly I say unto you, before Abraham was, I am. He's associating himself clearly with the name of God, the existence of the Hebrew God, and he is like the Hebrew God. He had no beginning. He will have no end. The Jews have committed the error of ascribing to Jesus merely a temporal, time-based existence. They saw only the historical manifestation, not the eternal person, only the human, not divine. Jesus reaffirms his eternal, timeless, and absolute essence. The appropriate character of these words as being used here to introduce the truth is immediately evident. Isaiah 42:8 says, I am the Lord. I am, I am. That is my name. And my glory will I will not give to another. Some people belong to religious groups that teach that you can be God, you can be so powerful as to be like a God, but I am the I am. I am the Lord. And my glory will I not give to another. That teaches us that there's only one true God. Amen? He doesn't get elected. He doesn't even run for office. He is God since the beginning. He is God now, and he'll be God in the future. And he won't share his glory, his praise, with anyone else. So, I appeal to you on a truth basis and logic basis that if you think, if you belong to a religion that thinks that you can be a God on your own world, you can be a God locally, you can be worshiped with the glory that God has, you're mistaken. Then they took up stones to throw at him, but Jesus hid himself and went out of the temple, going through the midst of them, and so passed by. I want to read Leviticus 24:16 to you. And he that blasphemes the name of the Lord, he shall surely be put to death, and all the congregation shall certainly stone him. That was what was in their minds of the crowd. Unable to restrain themselves and their natural, wrathful indignation any longer, and apparently viewing Christ's statement as a horrible blasphemy, which must be punished with death by stoning, the Jews run to a place in the large temple area where building operations still were going on. Stones are lying all around. They're convenient because it was a building built with stones. These they pick up in order to hurl them at Jesus and thus to put him to death without due process of law or trial by court. In the meantime, however, Jesus, knowing of course that the proper moment to lay down his life had not arrived. It was going to be 6 months later that in the Passover he would give himself for us, but not at the Feast of Tabernacles. He went secretly, concealed by the crowd, out of the temple. I want to share a personal remark with you. You ever have somebody come to your door and offered to teach Bible classes? I used to. I haven't had one for years come by because I think because of my words. I always recognize these door-to-door visitors as with respect. I say sir. I say ma'am. I say, you know what? I'm glad that you know the Bible. So I start to respond to them with words like this. I bring up this verse, and I say that Jesus was stating he was God, like God the Father, and more, exactly like God the Father. Jesus was God of very God. Jesus was God in the flesh. And there's usually some response, but it's not clear because these persons I'm thinking about think that Jesus was the first of God's created beings. Surely he was not God himself. So I conclude the discussion with, wow, I think that Jesus was God of very God. That's what the Athanasian Creed says. That's what the Council of Chalcedon says. Good thing Jesus is not here, because you'd be picking up rocks and throwing them at him and me both. Ha ha ha. For us, Jesus suffered in various ways in this passage. He suffered from abuse. Are not we correct in saying you are a Samaritan and have a demon? The Prince of Life responds, I do not have a demon. If anyone keeps my word, he will certainly never see death. Jesus suffered accusations. Now we know you have a demon. Who are making yourself? Abraham's delight responds, Abraham, your father, was extremely happy that he was to see my day, and he saw it and rejoiced. Jesus also suffered ridicule. You have not even lived 50 years, and have you seen Abraham? The Eternal One answered, before Abraham was born, I am. and Jesus suffered from open violence. So they picked up stones in order to hurl them at him. Bono was asked, who was Christ? I'm not saying he's a believer. I don't think he is, as a matter of fact. But he was asked, who was Christ? And he responded with this paragraph. I think a defining question for a Christian is, who was Christ? And I don't think you're let off easily by saying he was a great thinker or a great philosopher, because actually he went around saying he was the Messiah. That's why he was crucified. He was crucified because he said he was the Son of God. So he either, in my view, was the Son of God, or he was nuts. Forget rock and roll messianic complexes. This is Charlie Manson type of delirium. And I find it hard to accept a whole millions and millions of lives, half the earth, for 2,000 years have been touched, have felt their lives touched and inspired by some nutter. He's saying the right words. Whether he believes them or not is up to him and God to decide. But who was Christ? In John 8:58, he was saying clearly to a Jewish audience, Exodus 3:14, I am who I am. He responded with the covenant name of God, Yahweh. He identified with his Father. He said his Father glorified him. He said that he came to do the Father's wishes. Jesus could not have been more plain. He demands respect, attention as God, a very God. The question is he your God?